Welcome to True Romance. This is Carolina Barlow.
And this is Devin Leary.
Devin looks like she got her second nose job today because she is wearing a Breathe Right.
A Breathe Right strip. Yep.
Devin said it's for her deviated septum. And I said, Devin, you don't have to lie about that anymore. We've come far as a society in addressing plastic surgery. You can do whatever you want to your nose.
I weirdly didn't really feel like I had to lie about me getting a nose job. When I was in high school, I just felt like truly the cause is obvious. So it would be a farce for me to put on airs of I had something going on. I just was I think I might have said when I was younger, I might have broken my nose, which hasn't everyone,
I might have.
Hasn't everyone been in a water balloon fight where their best friend accidentally swung their arm backwards and hit them in the face? That happens to the best of us.
I didn't have many friends as a young child. I am going to get a boob job and say it's for my back. People are going to be like, oh, you got breast reduction surgery? And I'm like, no, I got my boob job to balance my back out. My back was most of my body.
My back was most of my body.
I really want to get to our interview today because it's one of the best conversations I've ever had. And
still thinking about it.
Still thinking about it. Think about it regularly. And I just can't wait for
our
listeners to hear it. But first, Devin and I wanted to do some highbrow, midbrow, lowbrow.
It's the True Romance segment, official segment, a highbrow, midbrow, lowbrow. You know it well.
We want a banjo under that, and we want to make it a really happy hour sort of.
I want synth. It's high bro, mid barrel, low bro.
We can probably ask Katie to put in some synth. We don't need your weird Motorola phones.
I actually think that went really well. It matched perfectly. I've never listened to that video before, and somehow I because of my musical gifts, I knew how to match my voice to that perfectly.
My highbrow this week, without further ado, is the Tina Turner documentary on HBO. I watched it last night. I planned on writing while watching TV. You know, when you're trying to figure out what to watch
every day. Yes.
You're what do I watch that only needs half my attention? Something.
Yes.
A Law and Order I've seen before. An Office episode I've seen before. Throw something up there that I won't really need to engage in. An old movie. What have you. I wanted to see the Tina Turner documentary. And documentaries are something that's fun to write to because you can look up, think about it for a second, go back down, whatever.
The rabbit hole.
I think most women love Tina Turner. I used to watch her videos. I used to watch videos of her dancing on YouTube just because I've never seen anything like it. I am hesitant to bring up God or higher power on the podcast because I feel like it alienates our beautiful atheist audience or our atheist listeners. But I will say that I truly think that her gifts came from God. They are supernatural. She never studied music. She never studied dancing. She says that she was just doing her own thing. It's just truly unbelievable. And a lot of the documentary, obviously, is about her survival through an abusive relationship and her comeback. And it's not romanticized in this weird, survival American story where women go from trauma to a happy ending. She's admittedly had a really hard life, even though she's, an icon now, and everyone's obsessed with her, and the Rolling Stones are obsessed with her, and she's performed stadiums for hundreds of thousands of people, and is a Grammy winner. She had a really, really, really hard and isolating journey that she calls torture, and it was just visually a fascinating portrait because there's just so much incredible footage of her, and it made me rethink how we talk about women in society. I can't go any deeper because if I start talking, I'll never stop. One of the things that fascinated me, and it's fascinating to me about the Meghan Markle, it's fascinating to me from the Dylan Farrow story, and it was fascinating to me listening to the Tina Turner documentary, was that our initial response to when women tell us about pain is, did that really happen? It just is America's initial response. So she finally talks about her abuse in a People magazine article in the 80s with Ike Turner. She finally admits to what her marriage with Ike was really like. She says it was torture. And when she describes it, it was torture. And she was with him for 16 years. And the first thing the fucking People magazine journalist asked was, torture? Question mark.
Oh, my God.
It was torture. Listen, I don't think he's like a quote unquote bad person. I think that he was shocked to hear it. But the first question is, really?
I know.
Is so exhausting. I'm tired.
I'm so tired from that. And
I'm so tired of the conversation.
I totally agree.
It's like people doubting Meghan Markle. They're like, this was her plan all along. She's an actress.
It's also like people immediately minimize. I feel like in the Alan V. Farrow documentary, there was just like so many excuses brought up. Okay, well, he's a germaphobe. You know, that's so unlike him. Why would he do that at this stage in his life? Why this? And the Meghan Markle thing, people were like, well, that's just the monarchy. They're really old fashioned. So she knew what she was signing up for. And it's like, wait, what?
How could you know what you're signing up for, by the way, going into a family that you have has this crazy history?
I didn't know anything about the history of it until...
That's the thing, though. If you were marrying Harry, no one would be like, Devin, you know what you're signing up for. We'd be like, you're a princess.
I know.
They wouldn't be like, by the way, you'll never be able to seek therapy if you're in a terrible place.
I know. No, I mean, it's pretty...
Pretty crazy.
It's pretty crazy. No, so I watched this documentary, Diana in Her Own Words, and yes. I didn't know anything about her. And I was like, holy fucking shit. Like, again, she was 16 when Prince Charles met her. Great. She was told like she had to remain a virgin and protect her virginity.
Nice try doing that to me, by the way. I would have gotten off the train and been like, you're way too late.
The train.
What's your highbrow?
Okay, so my runner-up for the highbrow was going to be this documentary Trial 4 on Netflix. I was suggested it and watched it a few weeks later, was completely sucked in. It's the story of Sean Ellis, who was wrongfully convicted of killing a Boston police officer. It's all about corruption in the Boston Police Department. Features an incredible female lawyer character, Rosemary Scapiccio, who I was in love with. Anyway, that was my runner-up, but I think I'm going to have to go with something a little more political for my highbrow recommendation, and that is the vaccine.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to say it. I just think like the vaccine is... something I can get behind. It's something that really has the power to change my world in the sense that I might be able to eat appetizers with a group again and may change other people's worlds who have more important things to do, like take their kids to school instead of the living room or go to work to make money. And listen, for all of us, all of our responsibilities are equally important, but we're not going to be able to do any of them without that vaxi. And I love how it's like there's so many different brands, like choose your fighter, but I guess you can't really choose it because they choose it for you. But still, it's like fun surprise that you go there and you find out like, am I getting Pfizer? Oh, it's Johnson & Johnson. Ooh, 2-in-1. Cool. I've heard that's what people are doing.
That's what I sounded like when I got my vaccine.
Oh, yeah. What's your midbrow?
My midbrow is the Chani Nicholas app. It is a horoscope app. You put in your birthday, your birthplace, your birth time, and it basically gives you of these windows into what the past 10 years have looked like in your horoscope, what the next month looks like, what the next 2 days looks like in your horoscope. What your week ahead looks like. Listen, horoscopes never really get it on the nose perfectly for me. Does that prevent me from reading them every single week? Of course not. Every time I see a horoscope say, this week is amazing for love, get with that special person and you're going to have a night of fireworks, I'm like, no, I won't. I'm going to be single for the next year, probably. I'm not saying that to disparage myself. I just know myself well enough to know that it's going to be a while until I meet someone I really like. So I still love reading about the signs, reading about the planets, reading about the stars. And Chani makes that very visually appealing. The app is well designed. And I just really like her writing. I really like her stuff. I like her Instagram page. What is your midbrow, Devin?
My midi is Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in person without a mask. No, I'm kidding.
That's your highbrow, be honest.
Imagine if I was like, okay, I have to go to Ripley's Believe It or Not. And for me, that's for my mental health. So if the government says I can't do that, like, I don't know what to tell you. And I can't wear a mask because I need to show my facial expression when I see the two-headed turtle. So, like, I don't know what to tell you.
That's why Devin leaves the royal family. She's like, I went to them. I said I needed to see Ripley Believe It or Not.
I went to them. I said, I need to live within a 25-mile radius of the Ripley's Believe It or Not Times Square location. And if you can't get behind that, then I'm not queen any longer. Any longer. I'm not queen any longer. I'm a muggle. And they were like, okay. Okay, so no, my midbrow is Murder Among the Mormons. Title alone, sign me up. Title alone, I'm in. Title alone, I'm looking up. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait. I watched it with my mom and I highly recommend. It's really kind of twisty and turny. Let me say this. The people at the beginning that you're like, I'm their number one fan, you might change your tune a little bit because it's twisty and turny. And also, I want to say that Mormons are the most fucked up, fascinating group of people.
It's
in
true.
Every way. It's just like fucked up white people everywhere being fucked up and white and weird. And so that is just fascinating to me. It had me thinking about a lot of deep themes. So I would say that's a good midi for the week.
My lowbrow. Where do I start? I like watching surrogacy journeys on Instagram.
Love.
My true lowbrow, for no specific reason, would be wrapping my hair after a shower in an old t-shirt. Because it's better for your hair, supposedly. When you look this up online, there are differing opinions. I think wrapping my hair in a towel sucks all the moisture out of my hair. If I wrap it in an old t-shirt, it softens. My hair has time to dry without being all gross and scaly afterwards. So listen, do people come to me for beauty tips? Never. Never in my life. But I have curly hair. It took me years to figure out what to do with it. Another great trick is bear with me. If you like what your hair looks like after you went into salt water at the beach, if that's where you get the best curls, listen, you shampoo, you conditioner, you take a bowl of warm water and you put whatever salt. You could put cooking salt in there. You whisk it, you dunk it over your head. You taste like salt for the rest of the day. But you look amazing. So yes, I have some hair tips.
I love that. I'm going to try that.
It's so amazing. It's where I actually haven't done it in a while. But when I lived in New York and I didn't have a lot of money to spend at Sephora or even Duane Reade or CVS, I would make a little bowl of salt water. And I remember a boyfriend at the time was like, wait, is that why you taste like salt? And I was like, what? And he was like, whenever I kiss you, like, because salt water would like drip down my face sometimes. He was like, I just thought you were sweating all the time. And I was like, don't you know it can be both?
I just thought your face sweated profusely at all times.
And I was like, yeah, it does. Me in the city in New York, I'd always have a mustache of sweat. And that was my entry. That was my submission into the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum.
Believe it or not, I have a sweat mustache at all times.
Devin, what's your lowbrow?
My lowbrow was tough to choose yet again. I have a lot of options. But I will say that my lowbrow this week is Summer House on Bravo. for a lot of us Bravoians, it's really been tough to hold on to the non-housewife series recently. We basically lost Vanderpump Rules because of racism, because of parenthood. It's a lot of things. I will be watching the next season, but I mean, it's really just out of necessity at this point. I don't have a lot of faith that it's going to be great. And Southern Charm is still interesting, but mostly racist people. So it's been tough for us, but we have Summer House, and I want us to hold on to Summer House. I believe in Summer House. And the reason I believe in it is, first of all, it's just like a very, as Paul Scheer once said, it's like a remnant of the real world era. It's a bunch of people living in a house for the summer. And what it used to be is it would go back and forth between their lives in the city and their lives on the weekends in the Hamptons, which was kind of fun. But this summer, it's in quarantine, so they're all just stuck at the house, which is like obviously a lot of drama. And there's a narcissist on it named Luke. Narcissists are always a great add to a reality show, which really I've been thinking a lot about, like Andy's decision making. And I feel like when he sometimes I'm in awe of Andy's skills, because I think like in the first season that Luke was on, I was pro Luke. He seemed like any other guy. Somehow Andy knew that Luke would become the perfect villain, and he has.
When she speaks of Andy, she speaks of Andy Cohen, by the way. Some of us don't have the shorthand, so that's what I've been trying to figure out for the past 30 seconds. And I thought, oh, she's talking about Andy Cohen.
Andy gives us things that we don't deserve all the time, and I'm so grateful to him. And I really recommend just a fun little romp through a Hamptons house, which is called Summer House.
And with that, we thought this would be quick, but it wasn't. And we apologize for that. We are going to take a quick commercial break, and we are going to be back with Highbrow Interview. I can't wait for you guys to listen to it. Please stay tuned. I want true romance.
Welcome back to True Romance. Let's get to our guest for today.
Our guest today is so legendary. Devin and I have been excited all week. We are shaking. And her bio is a true wonder. She's a U.S. Air Force veteran turned legal luxury courtesan who you may recognize from the acclaimed HBO docuseries Cat House, which you all know I've spoken about on the pod and how big a fan I am of that show. It documented the famous Moonlight Bunny Ranch brothel where Amy skyrocketed to 11-time Bunny of the Year, became their number one earner of all time. To use the words from Amy's website, if I may, Air Force Amy is the most publicized legal brothel worker in the history of mankind. She is also a writer, a certified clinical sexologist, sex educator, loveologist, and sex therapist. Please welcome to True Romance, Air Force Amy.
Oh, you guys are too kind.
You're too kind for joining us. We're starstruck.
You're too kind. When I write those things on my website, it's because I'm competing with the other girls for clients, right? So I don't really mean all that stuff. I'm not that much full of myself.
No,
I loved reading your website so much. It was such a, like, beautiful story. Just the about me section was so fun to read. I wished it was a book.
There's gonna be a book,
ladies. Right, that's yes. True. Yeah, we read that you're writing a memoir in it, or we heard it in an interview recently. Is that true?
It's true. It's very true. Well, you know, the so I've worked 30 years in the brothels, right? So I've seen basically almost the whole history of the legal brothels in Nevada. They've only got 20 years on me, you know, past my 30 years. So I've seen the rise and demise of almost every legal brothel. Well, all the major players in Nevada.
Wow. So, how do you like to describe your profession? Because some people just describe it generally as a sex worker. Some people say working girl. Some people say escort.
Okay, are we allowed to cuss on this show?
Yes, of course.
Of course.
Okay, I smell ass crack for a living, okay? Okay. Come come on. Listen, you know, no brass tacks. You can, I love this legal luxury courtesan. You know, come on. Let's get real here. You know, I like to say that I'm a legal prostitute. I like to put that before, because there's just I don't know if there's that much of a connotation between a legal prostitute and an illegal prostitute, but I kind of, you know, I'm kind of judgy like that. So I know other people are judgy. You know, I don't like to call myself a sex worker because there's this legal and illegal part, you know? So, I mean,
that's such a good point.
You know, so it's just apples and oranges. But we're so many, there's so few oranges, the legal prostitutes, there's so few oranges. You know, I'd like to get on the bandwagon and fight for all sex workers. And I just don't know how to do that. I only really only know my part of the industry. So I'm a legal prostitute.
What do you think are common misconceptions about what you do? And I'm sure there's so many, but... Yeah. So many people just see nothing except stereotypes from what they've seen on TV or in movies. And I'm sure there's so much that you would want to tell them, or you probably don't even care. But what do you think are things that people get wrong?
The girls that do talk about their experiences in the sex industry or write books and people, I think we just know that people don't want to hear negative. So you're going to get books and things like 50 Shades of Grey. You're going to get The Girls Next Door. You're going to get these girls that have these glamorized images of prostitution. I was a high-priced escort. I was a high-end escort. Heidi Fleiss, top dog. You know, you're not hearing the stories from the girls that are just, you know, the daily grind or... You know, the girl, you're not hearing those stories. And I don't know if anybody wants to hear them. So what you do see are documentaries that are very dark, you know.
Yeah.
Dark documentaries and dark sex workers. And yeah, it's really dark. So it's hard to give a shine a really nice light on us, on what we do. Cat House didn't even do that. I was kind of disappointed that, you know, 13 episodes of Cat House didn't even shine a light. It was all, you know, oh, come to the party. And it's, you know, there's just so many facets to it. It's just like any other real job. You can't just put it in one sentence what it is. It's just, you know, you have good days, you have bad days, you have good things, you have bad things, you have, you know, is there drugs in it? Yeah, there's drugs. There's drugs in every industry.
Wall Street, yeah.
You know, there's addictions in every industry. Come on, man. It's everywhere. So, but they like to shine, you know, oh, prostitution is full of drugs and pimps and bad, seedy things. You know, and so we put ourselves in a little bubble and we live in our little world, and it becomes very cult-like because we're in our own little bubble and doing our own little thing and being our own little people and just trying to shed some light and some fun and make a little money and make a difference in someone's life.
Yeah. That's all. From what you're describing, it's sort of like people miss out on just sort of the 9-to-5 regular grind as you would have in any other job.
Yeah.
You know, when we went online, it became a totally different, it's a totally different job. It's like I'm an insurance agent or I have a store within a mall. Okay, you know, it's like we're all little stores. We're businesses within the business in the legal brothels, which is different than anywhere else, okay? Because my pimp is different than that pimp on the street, or he supposedly is. He has a legal umbrella anyhow, okay? Okay, but so we're little business women. We're entrepreneurs, and we're trying to sell our services and sell our business. It's like being an insurance salesman. You have your clients you keep in contact with. You're sending birthday cards and... you know, and newsletters and emails and putting out, you know, we have to get on all the social media now, the Instagram, the Twitter, all this, you know, just advertise. That's what you're doing. You know, you get a business and it's not so much the business that you do. It's the advertising that goes with it.
Right.
So we just become little marketing professionals. And that's what we do.
I think one thing that I really admire is how you've clearly been able to keep up with all of these shifting trends, like OnlyFans, TikTok, Instagram, all this stuff. But I was going to ask if you remember the moment when the modern sex industry started shifting towards like internet porn, or like the internet porn boom started, and how that affected the legal brothel industry.
Yeah, totally. When I first, okay, so I started in the brothels, what was it, 1990? 30 years ago? Is that 30 years? 30
yeah,
years ago?
Yeah. I can't do math, so I don't know, but yeah. Sure.
So I was in the military, and I actually worked with computer security, and I knew some things about computers. But the first 10 years in the industry, the places that I worked for, they were so afraid that we were going to steal customers and steal money that they shielded us from all types of any type of technology. We weren't allowed to have We weren't allowed to have payphones.
Oh wow!
We weren't allowed
wow.
to use the payphones on the weekends. Okay, they wanted us just in that little bubble and working, and nothing bothering us, and no drugs coming in, and so forth and so on. So by the time I got to the Bunny Ranch in the year 2000, and the internet was becoming a thing. I don't know how long it had been a thing because I didn't know anything about it, didn't know how to use it when I got there. And one of the girls showed me how to use it. They had a computer in the parlor, and she showed me how to use it. And within that year, I started using message boards and getting on and creating a name and doing contests and getting on these message boards and making a name for myself there. And then I got my own website before the Bunny Ranch did. I had my own message board before they did. So I was cutting edge technology in 2000 till maybe, I don't know, 2010. And then I kind of slacked off. I didn't jump on, I did MySpace. I didn't jump on the Twitter, the Instagram, the YouTubes, all these things until this year. I secured my name on those platforms because other people would use my name. So I secured my name, but I didn't really need those platforms. I have a client base. And I didn't really need to advertise all that much. So yeah, so I took a back seat in the social media when it came to Twitter. You know, I wasn't that girl that wanted to take pictures of my whole daily life. I didn't want to take selfies. I'm not that girl. I would spend $5,000 on a photo shoot, totally glamorous, totally photo, you know, everything. And that's what you got. I was like, yeah,
that's
can't, you know what? Uh-uh, that's not me.
Yeah.
You were using it just as like a business website.
Yeah.
Yeah. It still isn't me to do selfies of my whole day. My life isn't that exciting. Okay. It's like, yeah, I went to the kitchen, to the parlor, had a client, we can't diagnose. Yeah. Yeah. Not so exciting. Got my hair done, nails, tan. I was on a message board for 14 hours.
Sounds familiar, yeah.
There's so much more to your life, though, than the Cat House series, which so many people know you for. What are a few things that you wish more people knew about yourself?
I actually wish people knew less of me. I'm a very private person. You know? I mean, there's too much about me out there, okay, without me explaining.
Yeah, right.
How did that happen? How did this happen? Why did they say this? What's that? You know? Yeah, there's just too much information out there about me. I mean, that I'd prefer to keep private.
Well, that's another question I had is, how has your career impacted your dating life at all? How has it sort of shaped your ideas of romance and the other more private side of your life?
Yeah, there's no dating. There's no private side to my life, actually. There's no privacy, really.
Yeah.
You know, I try to keep some things private, but I'm a company man. My first priority was the Bunny Ranch, and to get the Bunny Ranch name out there and get my name out there and to make money and be a top booker. And that was just this narrow tunnel that I was in for a long, 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 long time. And now that the brothel has been closed, we've been closed now for over a year. The governor still has us shut down.
Oh, really? I didn't
know.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, we're still shut down. And so it afforded me to, say, come out of the ether. You know, I was in this.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I got out from under the ether, and I'm, well, you know, 6 months was, wow, this is the longest I've ever had off. And this is kind of cool. I watched Tiger King like 4 times. You know, this is kind of cool. I'm just getting a forced vacation. I can dig it. I can dig it. Yeah, we'll be open soon. And then 6 months came along and then 7 months. And I was like, oh, wow. Now what am I going to do? 9 months. What am I going to do? What am I really going to do? I never really prepared for any type of retirement. I just never, I never thought I was going to go through menopause. I never thought I was going to have to retire. I just live in this, I don't know where I live in my head, where I'm at. But so yeah, these things happen. And so now I just think, well, book. And hopefully I can turn that into like a Netflix series.
Yes. That would be amazing. Because
the book is crazy, you guys. It's crazy.
I can't even imagine. Just the Air Force stories alone, I'm sure, would be better than any war movie that I've seen of just like British men running from guns.
I would watch your show so much faster than I would watch Tiger King.
Yeah. You know, I'm like, if Tiger King can have a show, and I love that show.
I loved it too.
You know, I was like, I'd have people watch. I'm like, you know, you have to see this. You know, I thought it was great. But yeah, there's, and it's not until you talk to someone that's not in the business that's helping me kind of put the book together. And they're like, yeah, your stuff is crazy. Yeah, your stuff is crazy. I left home at the age of like 13, started hitchhiking around the country for 5 years. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and it's like my best friend's daughter is 13. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Right.
Because to me, my life was just my life.
Yeah.
And I just did it. You know, you just do it. You did it. It's done. Deal with it. Move on. Do what's next. What are we doing? What am I doing now? And so I'm writing this book, and then I thought, like the first month into it, I'm going, you know what? I'm going to have to go back into therapy about this.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, I think so. You know, because it's like, I can tell a story and it's all good. And I can tell, and I can write a story. And, you know, and I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to act like a victim. I know I got to put on my big girl pants and keep on keeping on. And it's like, it's all good. And then you go to sit on the toilet and go, what the fuck happened to me? What the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of processing going on, a lot of growing going on this year, which is cool. And I take my, you know, I take a step back and I go, okay, we got to write about this.
You know? Right. Yeah.
I think it will help so many people who read it also.
It's a catharsis. I hope that I just come out with the right message, the overall message. I think the overall message is be good to your kids, man. careful how you raise them. I don't know how anyone could do it. I have never had children. I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't know how people do it. How do you do it without hurting them in some way?
Right.
Or shaping them in some kind of way that you just don't know, man. So, yeah, that and the message that you know, I just hope that today, I get through today feeling good enough and feeling grateful and helpful and, just grateful, helpful, and good enough.
I love
that. Wow, I love that so much. I have chills.
You know,
I have read in interviews about that struggles with PTSD. I have PTSD as well for different stuff. And how did that impact your work? And how? What are your coping mechanisms with them now?
The PTSD, I'd go so far as to even say I have complex PTSD from, you know, complex PTSD. And, you know, I take a very low dose of, like, it's like Chantix, bupropion, the lowest dose of anything you can take. And I'll, you know, like, I would remember, like, I would forget to get my refills and be like, I'll be okay.
Right, you know? Yeah.
And 30 days later, I'm just, like, angry. I'm blowing up at things.
Yeah.
And I want, you know, throwing things and just this low-lying anger that set me off, you know. And not that anyone would see it. I would. You know, so, and I just, oh, wow, yeah, I guess I need this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I think we, Devin and I talk it. About that a lot.
You know, so, and it just, yeah, take it away and it's not so good. But I mean, it's not nightmares. Who doesn't have nightmares? Big deal. You know, I minimize all my stuff is what I do. I minimize everything.
Yeah.
So.
I think Carolina does that as well sometimes.
As women, we, like you said, as women, we're like, okay, keep going. You know, and sometimes yeah. that feels like if I pause and feel it, it'll be too overwhelming.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and I don't know, I think that maybe men don't know how to understand us or know what to say, because men want to fix things and help. You know, they think that we're talking to them because we need something.
Yes.
Right.
You know, not just that, not just to just be there right now. Okay. Just be there. You don't have to fix anything. You don't have to have an answer. You don't have to have anything. Just, you know, so we're used to not talking about our stuff.
Yeah.
Cause we're not going to, you know, cause yeah. But with our girlfriends, we do, right?
I think that's always so apt. Yeah. I think that there's a frustration almost, right? When we divulge or give insight into our lives to men because they don't know what to do, right? Yeah. And they're taught like they have to be in action. They have to, you know, be the handyman. And yeah, it's like, no, I just want you to be here and present with me right now and hear this.
You know, yeah. So you get one, you have one real good girlfriend that, you know, she signs off on all your bullshit, okay? You know, you have that one girlfriend that you talk to and she's right behind you, everything you say and everything you do, yeah. And then you have someone else that you talk to that pulls your covers and says, nah, your glasses are on backwards, okay? Yeah. That's not how that happened. Okay, check yourself. Okay. You know,
yeah.
So it's just having a community, surround yourself with the right people, you know, surround yourself with good people.
I totally agree that with the right people, I feel like anything is possible. And I don't even know what I would do without Carolina, because she's that girlfriend for me. But so many times, like in previous relationships, when I've talked about anxiety or like had a panic attack, the guy that I was with had no idea what to do or what to say and would like immediately, like you said, try to fix it and say like, let's go for a run, let's do something, let's whatever. And I was like, I don't want to do any of those things. But one of the first things I noticed about Carolina as a friend is that she just like listened and didn't try to fix it or anything. And sometimes she would even just be like, yeah, that just sounds really scary and I'm sorry. Or like, I don't know, that fear might come true and I'll be here for you if it does. And I was like, oh, this is what real support feels like. But I was curious if you found, Amy, that there's a lot of community in the legal brothel industry because of that kind of like bubble thing where you all are kind of going through this unique experience, or if that's something that's lacking there.
Yeah, it's kind of lacking. I would say I had alliances. We would have alliances because, I mean, the number one thing that the brothels are doing, well, one of the ways that they kept the highly competitive, highly motivated sales team, okay, was a bunch of girls just, you know, throwing each other on the bus and trying to outdo the other and trying to be number one because you would get shamed and you know, who made the most money and this one made that much money. Why can't you make that much money? What are you not doing? So there's a lot of shame in there, you know, about making the most money. You had to make the most money. So, and maybe it was just me that been in, but it's not just me. You know, a lot of girls felt that. Maybe worth that type of personality where you really felt that were the ones that stayed. And there's a lot of processing to go on with that.
Yeah.
Okay. But so you'd have like a girlfriend this month, and then you'd have a falling out. But in the end, you all were still in this fighting from the same trenches, you know. But you didn't really give up your secrets. You didn't really, you know, you didn't really talk heart to heart. You had to it was best to have someone outside the industry that you could talk to. There wasn't anyone there wasn't anyone that I could really trust with my true feelings and my true insecurities and my true fears, you know, because they either wouldn't believe it because they're like, well, you're Air Force Amy. You don't have those things. you don't have the same problems I have. You're successful. And it's like, dude, you don't even know. I'm like so insecure. I'm so afraid. And I'm so, I don't feel good enough. And I so have such a higher bar to have to meet than you do. You know, so it was to have this time off of work is like, wow, I can breathe.
Yeah. Right.
I can breathe. I can live. I can, you know, just have like regular girlfriends, not alliances, not competition. It's just like the competition is gone and that feels so, 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 so good.
I'm so interested in the fact that as a working girl, you are in relationships with men that are naturally one-sided, right?
Yeah.
So how do you sort of balance that in terms of getting your own emotional needs met, or is that something that you handle on your own?
My emotional needs were just put off to the side.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I didn't have any emotional. I mean, I have a cat, the poor cat, okay? My poor cat.
He hears everything.
He has to deal with all of it, okay? Yeah.
He's like, I didn't sign up for this.
Like, you know, oh, God.
I don't have a PhD. That's so funny.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I have therapists, and it's no secret that I work a 12-step program, and that is just the only thing that really, really, really taught me everything I need to know about life and how to be. Because, I mean, if you look at how where I came from, and the truck stops, military, cat houses, whorehouses, streets, drugs, alcohol, I should be just a really rotten person. Mm-hmm. You would think that I would be. You would think that I would just have, like, you know, so.
Well, no one can see Amy in the Zoom right now except for us, but she literally glows.
She is a glowing.
She looks like she picked
bright.
Up me and Devin from the truck stop.
That's not true.
It actually certainly is, but I am sober too. And I wanted to ask because I remember. Which is so funny because, you know, we wanted to interview you. We had no idea you were sober until we read interviews. So it sort of weirdly felt meant to be. And I wanted to ask because I remember sex sober was so new to me. You know, I was in my 20s and I had had it before just as like, you know, when in relationships and stuff. But it felt so scary and vulnerable. And you know, when I got sober, I kind of was just like, I'm never having sex again. Are you kidding me? Like, I'm not no.
How am I going to do that?
Yeah. No.
That's what I've been doing this whole time? What the?
But now, you know, after years of not drinking, I would never want to have sex drunk again, you know, and I love that having, like, sober sex is so much better to me because I can be present and, you know, actually in the moment. But how has being sober affected your work and your day to day?
The actual acts of sex is actually, it's terrifying.
Interesting.
I mean,
yeah.
It's terrifying to come up to a stranger, a complete stranger, and get naked and have this book and sell this fantastic experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you have your own insecurities going on in your head. It's terrifying. But once you get your clothes off, it's all good. Okay. Once you get your clothes off and you're in, it's all good. It just, you know, it just becomes a God-given thing that it's all good.
Yeah.
You know, I love that.
You just jump in. You do something that scares you every day. You just jump in. Because it used to be, I mean, I was prescribed Valium for years and years and years and years and years. And it took me a long, 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 long time to get purely 100% clean and sober. It took mm-hmm. me a long time. Through the PTSD and all these things, I was prescribed Valium and they gave me like 120 a month and said take as needed. I always need this shit, man.
I need it 24/7.
I need this. I need it. Okay, you gotta do what? Yeah, I need it. I gotta do what? Yeah, I need it. I need. You know, so the first year coming off, that was so terrifying. The whole first year, all I wanted to do was just kill myself. And it was just like everything was overwhelming. Nothing could get done. It's like going 1,000 miles an hour in a station wagon full of junk in the back. And then you put the brakes down and everything just,
yes,
you know, comes back. And you're like, oh, my God, get out from under this. and oh, this is going to happen. Oh my God, what if that happens? What if I lose everything I have, which is just like a house in the suburbs? I'm going to lose everything.
Yeah. Amy, you are a writer. You are a natural writer.
Yeah. I know.
Oh my gosh.
A couple
of
designer purses and my Louis Vuitton shoes and my car and my house. I'm going to lose everything. I'll just kill myself if that happens. I'll just kill myself.
Yeah.
But, you know, just you live another day. You live another day without it. You live another day without it. You do another day. You rack up another day. You rack up another day. Rack up another day. And then it's like, oh, okay. We're going to be okay.
Yeah.
But then something hits you and it's like you call your girlfriends and you do your stuff that you taught.
We have to take a quick break and we'll be right back with more true romance.
I want true romance.
Welcome back to True Romance.
You know what helped me the most? I got to tell everyone. Is the VA. I went to classes at the VA, right? And they don't give you one-on-one. They give you groups. So you're like the only girl with all these guys, again. And they recognize who you are, right? And you know they're looking at your website. You can tell exactly when someone's like, yeah, I saw you naked.
Ugh.
You know, you can just see them looking at you going, I know who you are. You know, you're just like, oh, fuck me. I'm just trying to get my head together like you are, man. Come on. All right, just put that shit aside, okay? I'm just trying to get my head together. And but one of the things they taught us was to breathe. And I thought, are you fucking kidding me? Have you tried breathing? No, I'm having an anxiety attack. You want me to breathe?
Yes.
Breathe? Are you crazy? The world is closing in on me. I'm going to die. Yeah. Breathe. It takes more than breathing here. You know? But they would teach you that the military does on-the-job training. They're like that. They teach you practical application. And they would sit us down after, you know, this one doctor, after class, twice a week, 20 minutes, breathe. Hold in for, you know, breathe in for 10, hold for 10, out for 20. Any way you wanted to breathe, didn't matter. As long as you just breathed. If you breathed in and held for 10, you know, me personally, I'll breathe in and hold for 10. Breathe in for 10, hold for 10. Blow out for 20. And it works, man. Do it until you just calm down and it works. When you got nothing else to turn to. I can't take a pill. I can't take a drink. I can't throw something. I can't kill something. I can't kill me. I can't do anything, but this stuff is free and it works. And it's the silliest thing. It's the simplest thing.
I'm in tears right now. And I think that's so beautiful. And I think that is going to help people. And I think that, right. I remember being in therapy once and my therapist said, you're not breathing. You're holding your breath this whole time. And I was so weird, but I was like, you're right. Like, I, you know, that anxiety feeling where you're everything is caught in like you're below your neck in that chest area.
Yeah. So I thought I smoked cigarettes for so many years. That's the only time I breathed.
Yeah.
Right.
I know. Right? It's funny when I was trying to quit smoking cigarettes a few years before I actually did, but my therapist said, like, what do you enjoy most about it? And I was like, it's the one part of the day where I like step outside and don't look at my phone or anything and just like breathe. And she was like, so why can't you just go outside and breathe instead of smoking? And I was like, well, I'm also, you know, I like the head rush. I like, you know, looking cool. I like having something to do at parties. So I was like, it's not that simple. But yeah, I think that the craziest revelation for me personally has been that, like, of all the stuff I've done, like, I love therapy, but like I feel like I tried so many things before I tried the simple things of like just pausing, breathing, and talking to people and asking for help, and all that stuff was so simple it seemed stupid, and I never thought it would actually be helpful, but it really is. And I just started doing this morning meditation thing through an app that is the same thing you're describing of like breathe in for 4, hold for 4, breathe out. And it is so helpful. It's crazy. So I really do agree that that is a helpful tool. But I also can't even imagine. I mean, just getting help can be so difficult for so many reasons, but having the added pressure of like people knowing who you are, I can't even imagine how stressful that is.
Yeah. Well, is, you know, I kind of, it's kind of stressful. but then I don't think of myself as like a celebrity. A lot of people will say, you know, the first thing I think of myself is I look down on myself and say, oh, you're a prostitute. I'm a prostitute. But that's also a cop out because I don't really have to fit into a mold in society. I can be different, you know, so on. And I have to practice being this no better than and no less than anybody else. And that's if I can accomplish that in one day, I'm living an even keel, just being normal. And
right.
That's the way I got to be. Just be, you know, what's normal. You know, I'm still always going to be crazy and have fun. And I think because I never really, after I left home at like 13 and I just never had a childhood. And I don't know, maybe I have my grandpa's genes, but I like to have fun and be silly and goofy. You know, I'm the goofy one and that's okay. You
know? I think that's so much what I loved about watching you on Cat House is that as women especially, we're taught that too much sex or sex, there's this dark underbelly to it and we shouldn't want to do weird stuff. And if we do, we're messed up and we're dark and all of this shame that is really what makes sex dark is the shame. You know,
yeah.
Like sex itself is actually totally fun and normal. And you know, I don't talk about like higher power that much on this podcast, but I do think like my higher power wants me to have fun. You know,
yeah.
Like, I don't think that's bad.
There's an old little saying that goes around. It says, yeah, I was, my higher power came down or God came down to me to a man and says, you know, if I could give you three wishes or if I could help you give you three wishes, what would they be? Oh, please. Or if I could take away your problems, what could I take? And the guy goes, oh, man, like this and that. And God takes that problem away. And he says, you have any other more problems? And the guy goes, oh, yeah, this and this and this. And takes that problem away and leaves him with no problems. And the guy goes, well, what am I supposed to do now? And higher power says, you go out and play. Yeah. Go out and play.
Yeah.
And that's what we're supposed to do. You know?
I love that.
I love that so much.
I loved, you know, in an interview, you talk about like these people who have actually really harmless kinks, like the guy you describe who wanted to fuck a pool toy.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's not normal, quote unquote, but he's not hurting anyone. You know, there's nothing
right?
like dark or taboo about it. Like it
was very functional, actually.
Yeah.
That was a quite functional little thing kink that he had because he was a long distance truck driver. And it turned, and you know, and we went through this whole sex act of, you know, he says, well, what do you need? Do you want me to show you how I do this? And I was like, yeah, by all means, go get whatever you fucking need to, whatever you gotta do, dude. This is taking too long. This is crazy. What do you need to do? Get it by all means. And goes, runs out
by
to his truck
means.
And runs out to his truck, gets his little pool toy and puts it on. And I think I'm supposed to wear it, right? I'm like, alrighty then, let's do this. And he's like, no. He takes it away from me, puts it on the floor and starts humping it. I'm like, wow, I didn't guess that. Okay. Okay, I didn't see that coming. But alrighty then. And you know, you let him finish and you just like real softly, gingerly. And by the way, how'd you get that kink?
Yeah, what led to that?
It sounds like what we were talking about earlier, where he just needed someone to listen, right? Like we were talking about guys listening. It's like, oh, you just wanted someone to sit there with no judgment, and that was healing for you.
Yeah. The thing was that he was a long distance truck driver, and he would take these latex big blow up dolls with him, and it just became too much to blow up. So. So
you only got so much oxygen.
You made it this big instead of this big. So, like,
that
right.
is really functional. I do respect like someone
you know?
Who can be innovative like that.
You know. I mean, so now they have like sex torso dolls, right?
Right.
I know.
Yeah.
Purely functional. Purely functional.
So you've had some clients that have lasted for years.
Yeah, I've got guys like 10 years, 15 years.
So those are 10 times longer than most Hollywood marriages.
or any relationship I have ever had.
Yeah, exactly. Have you fallen in love with anyone? I mean, is there some partnership there?
I have a love for these types of clients. You know, we know how far that love goes. It goes to a certain extent. You know, it's like, yeah, and we still respect each other's privacy, and we're still very respectful of each other. And I think that they last so long like that is because we're still long distance lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And we see each other on occasions, and we come bearing gifts and money, and that makes it last a long, long time. They take their dirty laundry home with them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a fantasy. Maybe it's and sometimes I'll spend a week with some clients, and it'll be a housewife fantasy for a
right.
week. Right. It doesn't last forever. You know, I don't get into a rut.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't become commonplace. It doesn't get boring. It doesn't get old because it's only in short periods of time.
And so. Then you go have your independence.
Oh, and then I'm, you know, doing my own thing.
Watching Tiger King anybody. Three times.
You know? You don't have to argue about if you've watched Tiger King too many times.
You know, I mean, and the types of clients, I mean, you know, I wouldn't even think of trying to watch Tiger King with. Okay. Yeah, it's not his thing. No. You know, I can be totally 100%, you know, conscious and reading into their next move and their next need and being intuitive and 100% attentive to them, you know, and my needs are out the window.
Mm-hmm.
So because I'm being paid to pay attention to you, and that's what I think people like.
Right.
In these situations anyhow, you know.
That is also our societal understanding of relationships and marriages, is that the housewife does think about the husband all the time and does take care of him. So it's not that, if anything, it's like a more honest relationship that you're in.
Yeah. And these clients are like quite older. So it's like they're, you know, born of the 50s and that type mindset too. So it's kind of funny the things that how different we actually really, really, really are. How, you know, I don't want to say anything political, a liberal I am, or
yeah,
you know, we're cut from different cloths, definitely.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, and we get along for a week.
Yeah. Yeah. It just reminds me of the fact that relationships are so much work. And we, Caroline and I, were just talking about how, like, it's hard sometimes when you're in relationships with someone who does expect to be like the star of the show, because if you have any sort of like life distraction that comes in, then that affects your job as like being their person. And it's really hard to find like an equal footing in a relationship. But that makes sense that that's why it works so well for a week. Because, yeah, you don't talk about like politics or like, what are we going to teach our kids when, you know, like, what are we going to talk about at the dinner table with our kids? And what do you think of this story that just came out? But yeah, it sounds like you have really good boundaries, which is something that I really envy because I don't naturally have that. Do you think that boundaries are like a really important part of the work that you do?
I think I have boundaries with my clients. And I have to say, I did not have boundaries with my boss, Dennis Hoff, for 20 years. Okay. He was a very strong, dominant personality. And I think in his book, they even call him a narcissist.
You can do that.
Okay.
We can go there. We can go there.
Okay. For 20 years. Yeah. You know, so, yeah. That was really, so I had boundaries. It was like I could do things in my parties, what we call parties, and with my clients, I could set these boundaries and be the girl in charge and say yes or say no. And then outside of that, the person I worked for was like, I could never say no.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can't say no, you know? I mean, many years later, I'd say like 18, 19 years into it, I got to where I finally said, okay, just say yes to everything, but do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of worked.
it.
I was like, so I thought that I was there to tell these girls, look, you don't really have to do everything you don't want to do. Just say yes and do what you want to do. Right. I figured it out. And I'm here to tell you how to get through this without really biting into all the bullshit that I did and driving yourself crazy. Mm-hmm. So look, this is how you navigate this person.
It really makes me think that, like, I wish there was a union or a safety net. And how would you like to see the industry change in sort of that direction?
Well, I don't think it's the industry so much as a person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was one person's style. It was one management style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the industry, how I would like to see a change in the legal process. So there's, you know, I think they're up against a fight right now. I think they're going to fight for their lives to get back open. So, I mean, 2 years ago, they had this huge ban the brothels thing on the ballot, and we won by 85%. The people, our community loves us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they meet us. The girls are cool chicks, you know, insecure, cool chicks, you know.
Is that the new name of our podcast, Devin?
Insecure, cool chicks. I would trademark that.
You know, insecure cool chicks just trying to be nice and get along without any ruffling any feathers. We just want to just do what we do. And, you know, most of them are single moms. Just feed my kids, get back mm-hmm. home to my kids, just take care of business and go home and be a mom. That's all I want to do, you know. And it's nothing more than that. And I can't say I haven't had kids, so I can't go. I just want to just not answer to anybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just want to do what I do. I don't answer to no one. You know, spend the money I want to spend on what I want to spend it on. Do what I want to do. Save the way I want to save. Dress the way I want to dress. Go where I want to go. When I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I want to do.
I have the same instinct in terms of work. Like, I feel like I value work more than relationships in a lot of ways because I value my independence the mm-hmm. most. And dependence on men or a husband, I don't think there's any shame in that. I think that's very natural, but it's a huge fear of mine.
Yeah,
it's a job, dude. It's a job. I mean, if you're going to be dependent on a man, it's like you are subservient to a man.
Yeah,
I think. I don't know. I can't say that for sure. Like I said, I might take everything back that I say after I hear it.
No, I
have to go
that.
Through every post, every tweet that I've ever sent. Be like, did I mean that? Or is that just my...
That was that day at that time.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Today, I agree with you that, being financially dependent is being subservient or requires that in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, unless you can work it. I mean, I'd love to be able to work it where you just throw all your money at me and let me go do whatever I want.
That would be the dream.
There's a Kanye West video where he just puts a stack of bills in his girlfriend's hand while she's about to go on an airplane. I remember watching that and being like, okay.
What does she have to do to get that?
Right. I don't know. Like, deal with Kanye West's personality.
Yeah.
Well, how long does she have to spend with for that? Yeah.
Amy, what do you think do you have a title for your memoir?
Yeah.
You don't have to share it if you don't want to.
Sort of. Yeah. I'm not sure if the publishers are going to go for it.
Yeah.
The title that I have, but it has to do with something my brother sold me for half a pack of cigarettes when I was 8 years old.
Oh my God.
Half pack of Winston. Okay. And now I look back on it like that was genius. Okay, take your little sister and get half pack cigarettes. That was genius, huh? Okay. At the age of like 11 or something, I'm like, how could you even think of that? How did you even know to do that? But he said, so it was to this kid in the back. We had a sand hill, and this kid was on a dirt bike, and me and my brother were up there, and I'm like, what am I doing here? Is he going to make me ride in the back of this bike and fall off? What? I mean, it couldn't be anything good. He never let me tag along for anything, right? So you guys are getting a chapter of a book right now. And in first one, and the guy turns around and pulls down a thing, and my brother said, just put your mouth around it. And then immediately thereafter, the entire scenario changed. The kid got scared and pulled his pants up and ran and threw my half pack of cigarettes to my brother, and a whole other thing in the neighborhood happened. But yeah, that's, you may have found the title in there, may or may not have found the title in there. Okay.
I think I picked up on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that might be it. I don't know. It's going to depend on the publisher, you know?
Well, I cannot wait to read your memoir. And I just want to say on a personal note that as someone who has struggled with everything from shame to PTSD, I just want to say that your grit and your confidence, and when I say your confidence, I understand that there's insecurity there too, but your faith and your survival is so inspiring to me.
Oh, thank you.
I feel the better for having spoken to you.
Oh, that's so cool. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. And you guys are so respectful. You know, I've had so many interviews where it's just the same silly questions. What's the strangest place you ever had sex? What's the most money you made? Come on, man. Think of something else.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I love your guys' podcast. I love that you touch on real, true feelings and mental illness and PTSD and things that people are so afraid to talk about. Oh, my God. PTSD. She's going to go shoot up the 7-Eleven. Stay away from her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
But it's funny when we had a message board on the Bunny Ranch site. And once a year, I would put up a topic. Why did you leave your last girlfriend? Why did you break up? Every one of them. Every year. Every single. She was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, shout out mental illness. What else?
Mm-hmm.
She was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out mental illness. What else? She was crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
Those were all about Devin.
I don't think I've ever dated someone who hasn't called me crazy, so they likely could all have been about me. No, I think that I survive on people being honest about what they've been through. It's like saved my life so many times to hear people talk about what they learned through a really traumatizing or just challenging or difficult experience. And I just was talking the other night to someone who's really close to me who got out of a abusive relationship recently. And she was saying, like, the only thing that helps me is hearing that other people went through it, because it's the only thing that breaks through the shame. And so I think someone like you who talks about this stuff with so much joy, like, that just oozes through your being. Like, you can talk about this gritty stuff, like Carolina said, that this trauma, this stuff that some of us could never even imagine going through, but you clearly have so much gratitude and perspective and joy that it really is so moving and inspiring. And I think we're both just so grateful that we got to talk to you today.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. It was so nice to talk to women outside the industry.
We are here anytime you want to come on the pod.
Yeah, and anytime you want to have community with us. Also, I love your Christmas special, I just wanted to say, on YouTube. And so everybody funny. Should watch it. I loved it so much. The poem, just, it was 5 stars.
That's so funny, because, you know, that's when I decided I needed to start doing YouTube. Well, I got onto social media this year. I got really serious about it on Christmas. I said, well, I got my proposal together for the book. And then I said, oh, man, I'm going to need followers. Mm-hmm. No one's going to give me a deal without followers. Okay, let me get onto social media and start getting. And that's what this is all about. Just getting followers so I can pitch the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I just don't like my life being followed that much.
Okay? Yeah.
But I have to do there's an end game here. There's an end game to get followers so I can pitch this book, because you just can't do anything without followers. So I put the YouTube up, and that Christmas special, that poem I made up in like 10 minutes.
Really?
It's perfect.
I was going to ask how you wrote it.
Like, I didn't know what to do for content. Genius. I'm like, I got my camera set up, and I'm like, all right, now what are we going to do? Do a Christmas poem. Okay. All right, here we go.
Wow. The delivery, the poem.
You're a lyrical genius.
I was trying to read. So, yeah. So I'm shooting something tonight. I'm going to do costumes that, because I found out that lingerie hashtag really like takes off.
Oh, good.
So
to know.
So hashtag lingerie. I'm gonna try and do things in lingerie.
Amazing.
I am too. I'm gonna do that for the True Romance account, because I know. We need more followers.
It takes off. Hashtag lingerie. And then tonight I'm gonna do costumes that I've already worn in photo shoots, be like then and now.
Great.
So
love it. So. I can't wait to read your memoir. I truly mean that. And thank you again. And True Romance listeners, Amy, where can we find your social media so we can continue with you on this journey?
Everything's Air Force Amy. You can just do all my links / Air Force Amy and see everything right there.
Thank you so much.
We'll post them on our Instagram too.
Yes. Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Amy.